It was around 10 a.m. on April 11, 1985, when plans to execute several men took shape in a small barangay in Tulunan, Cotabato. The conspirators were the private secretary to the municipal mayor, his two bodyguards, and members of the most feared paramilitary force in Mindanao. The targets were several suspected communist sympathizers, but the group would end up killing an Italian priest who wasn't on the list. You're listening to Stories After Dark, a Philippine true crime and mystery podcast powered by Anchor and released exclusively on Spotify, with new episodes out every Friday. This is the second and final part on the Christian extremist paramilitary group the Ilaga, specifically their involvement in the murder of Father Tulio Favalli, and where Norberto Bucay Manero Jr., the Ilaga's most notorious leader, is today. Listener discretion is advised due to the graphic nature of these stories. The Ilaga was formed in September 1970 by the so-called Magnificent Seven of Mindanao for protection against the threat posed by Moro Muslim insurgents. Working hand-in-hand with the Philippine military, the Ilaga left destruction in their wake wherever they went, killing Moro Muslims regardless of age or gender, and looting and burning their houses to the ground. They severed the body parts of their victims, like their ears, bones, and breasts, and they made them into anting-antings or amulets that were supposed to grant them invincibility in battle. Feliciano Luces, regarded to be the Ilaga's first commander, is said to be the one who began this practice, which served him well because according to folklore, he was impervious to bullets. In just a year after the Ilaga's formation, they reportedly were involved in 21 massacres that left hundreds of people dead. In 1972, after joining the government's Barangay Self-Defense Unit, later renamed the Civilian Home Defense Force or CHDF, the Ilaga brought forth even more destruction, and by the late 1970s, together with the CHDF and Philippine Army, they had reportedly destroyed thousands of Moro properties and killed an estimated 10,000 people. Luces, also known as Commander Toothpick, had attained an almost godlike reputation with all of his conquests as commander. He passed away in 1982 and was laid to rest at a public cemetery in North Cotabato, where anting-anting hunters have been known to visit his grave. Meanwhile, another one of the Ilaga's commanders had taken Lucis's place in terms of notoriety, someone who was also believed to be invincible in battle, a man by the name of Norberto de Duro Manero Jr., or more popularly, Commander Bucay. At around 10 a.m. on April 11, 1985, Bucay and his brothers Edilberto and Elpidio, along with Rodrigo Espia, Efren Pleniago, Severino Lines, Rudy Lines, and Roger Bedaño, met with Arsenio Villamor Jr., private secretary to the mayor of Tulunan, Cotabato, and his two bodyguards. Inside an eatery or small restaurant owned by a certain Reynaldo de Ocades, at kilometer 125 in Barangay La Esperanza, the 11 of them discussed the execution of suspected communist sympathizers. Villamor scribbled the following on a cigarette wrapper, quote, NPA v NPA, starring Father Peter, Domingo Gomez, Bantil, Fred Gapate, René alias Tabagak, and Villaning, end quote. Father Peter pertained to Father Peter Jeremia, an Italian priest of the Rome-based Pontifical Institute of Foreign Missions, who was suspected to be associated with the communist movement. Domingo Gomez was a Catholic lay leader, as was Bantil, a nickname that pertained to a certain Rufino Robles, and Fred Gapate, René alias Tabagak, and Villaning were messengers. Father Jeremia was the primary target of Bucay and the others, but they all reached an agreement that should they fail to kill him, they would execute another Italian priest in his place. Hours later, Bucay's brother Elpidio and two unidentified companions nailed a placard on a street post beside the eatery and another placard on a street cross sign nearby. The placards read the same thing as what Villamor wrote on the cigarette paper, but with the addition of, quote, versus Bucay, Edil, and Palo, end quote. At 4 p.m., Bucay, his brothers, and their co-conspirators, with the exception of Villamor and his two bodyguards, went to the house of their first intended target, Bantil or Rufino Robles, who lived not far from the eatery. Robles confronted them about his name being written on the placards, but Edilberto only asked him if he had any qualms about it, and without provocation, drew his revolver, aimed it at Robles' forehead, and fired. Robles was able to parry the gun, but he still got a finger in his right ear hit. Robles tried to gain possession of Edilberto's revolver until Robles' wife took him away from the scene. As Robles ran away with his wife, Edilberto shot at him again but missed. Bukay told his men to follow Robles as he fled to the house of Domingo Gomez, who was also a target. Bukay ordered that Robles not be allowed to get out, so he would die of a hemorrhage inside the house. Edilberto went back to the eatery and met the owner Reynaldo Diocades, whom he accused right then of being a communist sympathizer. Edilberto pistol-whipped him on the face, and moments later, while Diocades was feeding his swine outside, fired several shots from his M14 Armalite in Diocades' direction to scare him. The entire time Edilberto was assaulting Diocades, Bukay's other men watched and laughed loudly. Bukay and his men waited for Father Jeremia, but who showed up was a different priest altogether. At 5 p.m., responding to a distress call, the parish priest of Tulunan, Father Tulio Favalli, also of the Pontifical Institute of Foreign Missions, arrived on his motorcycle at kilometer 125. Favalli entered Domingo Gomez's house where Robles had escaped, and while Favalli was inside, Bukay and Efren Pleniago towed his motorcycle to the middle of the highway. Bukay opened the motorcycle's gasoline tank, spilled some fuel, and set the motorcycle ablaze. Favalli went out and accosted Bukay after seeing him and his men rejoicing as they watched the flames consume his motorcycle. Bukay stepped backwards and gave a thumbs down signal, at which point Edilberto asked Favalli, quote, "Ano ang gusto mo, padre? Gusto mo, father, bukon kong ulo mo," end quote, which translates to, quote, "What is it you want, father? Do you want me to get rid of your head?" end quote. Edilberto then, without warning, shot Favalli in the head. As Favalli dropped to the ground, Bukay asked Edilberto if that was the only way he knew to kill a priest, to which Edilberto responded by jumping over Favalli's body 3 times, kicking it twice, and firing several more shots at it. A shot shattered the skull and caused brain matter to splash on the ground. Onlookers watched in horror as Bukay flaunted the priest's brain, and his men surrounded the body so no one else could approach it, all the while joyfully singing the Visayan folk song Motiaka Baleleng. Because of this incident, Bukay became known as a priest killer, albeit inaccurately, as it was his brother Edilberto who shot Favalli to death. Bukay did boast, however, that he and his men ate portions of Favalli's brain, feeding into the belief that Bukay and the Ilaga partook in cannibalistic rituals. Bukay had so far been untouchable, owing to the protection granted by padrinos who were political allies in the Philippine Army who saw him as a major military asset. But his padrinos could no longer protect him after a shoot-to-kill order was issued for his arrest by President Ferdinand Marcos himself. One by one, Bukay and his co-conspirators were captured. Bukay in Negros on June 15, 1985, and Edilberto in Zamboanga del Sur a month later on July 16. In an interview the following month, the Manero brothers vowed to join the priesthood after their release. 2 months later, on October 3, Bukay and his men were arraigned in Kadapawan, Cotabato. All of them pleaded not guilty to the charges of murder, attempted murder, and arson. The following year in 1986, after years of oppressive and autocratic rule, hundreds of thousands of Filipinos joined the historic People Power Revolution on EDSA. Meanwhile, the trial against Bukay and his co-conspirators continued, and though they were supposedly in maximum security prisons, Bukay was said to have been seen several times roaming Zamboanga City. On September 4, 1987, Judge Benjamin Estanol found Bukay, his brothers, and 5 others guilty of murder, and they were all sentenced to the maximum penalty of reclusion perpetua, or 20 to 40 years of imprisonment. For the attempted murder of Rufino Robles, they were given an additional 8 years and 20 days, and for Bukay, who was also found guilty of arson, he was given an additional 6 years. They would all have been given the death penalty had it not been abolished just a few months earlier in the country. On February 2, 1988, in a move that surprised everyone, Bukay adopted Islam as his religion and took the name of Abdullah Manero Jr., as facilitated by the University of the Philippines Muslim Students Association. He requested to be transferred to the Davao Penal Colony in June, and his request was granted the following year by then Justice Secretary Franklin Drilon. Only 2 months later, however, he was ordered to be returned to Muntinlupa by then Prisons Director Meliton Goyena. In October 1991, a special order finally allowed Bukay to be transferred to the Davao Penal Colony. On May 13, 1992, in the middle of the chaos around the presidential elections, Bukay quietly escaped from prison, and this would remain a secret for several months. On October 5, 1992, Bukay met with Father Ronilo Villamor of the Kidapawan Parish and Julie Yi, a General Santos City-based entrepreneur and the wife of retired Colonel Alfonso Lumibao, who informed Bukay that she was working on a presidential pardon for him. 5 days later, on October 10, Bukay met with the newly elected President Fidel Ramos and a few military officials in Cotabato City. Gregorio Andolana, who was a church counsel and the chief lawyer of the case filed against the Maneros, was shocked when he saw Bukay out of prison. With his cover blown, Bukay was rearrested and sent back to the new Bilibid prison in Muntinlupa. On January 29, 1993, the Supreme Court affirmed the lower court's decision to convict Bukay and the others. 5 years later, in 1998, President Fidel Ramos commuted all of their sentences, with Bukay's getting commuted down to 24 years. Bukay had been submitting petitions for amnesty for several years, and on December 16, 1999, he was granted conditional pardon by newly elected President Joseph Estrada. This enraged a lot of people, and there were petitions for Estrada to recall the conditional pardon, including one from Father Jeremiah, who was Bukay and his men's primary target in 1985. Pressured by the public, Malacañang explained that someone secretly inserted Bukay's petition for amnesty into a pile of papers awaiting presidential signatures. 4 months later, in March 2000, the conditional pardon was revoked when it came out that Bukay had a pending criminal case in South Cotabato involving the abduction and murder of two Moro rebels, the Mamalumpong brothers Ali and Mambawatan. In that same month, a man named Miro Cortez came forward, claiming to be a survivor of the 1977 Batuganding massacre in Sarangani Island. According to Cortez, Bukay and his men were responsible for the massacre, and Bukay himself tried to hack Cortez to death. Cortez heard Bukay say that he and the other victims were to be cooked inside their barracks. Fortunately, Cortez was able to play dead and crawl away to safety. In 1983, he filed multiple charges against Bukay's men, but not against Bukay himself, as Cortez thought he was already dead. The charges were later settled, but Cortez resurfaced in March 2000, seeking Bukay's prosecution. Bukay had surrendered to then PNP Director General Panfilo Lacson, accompanied by Evelyn Silvestre, who was another one of Bukay's common law wives, lawyer Ruben Platon, and retired Army Colonel Rafi Galvez, who was a key member of the Reform the Armed Forces movement. Bukay was detained at the Sarangani Provincial Jail pending the trial of the 1977 double murder case. In 2001, 2 months after Estrada was ousted as president, Bukay escaped jail again with the help of Julie Yi and met with his first common law wife Leonarda Commander Inday Lacson. As a nationwide manhunt ensued, Bukay was interviewed by an ABS-CBN crew somewhere supposedly in General Santos City. He had become a national symbol at this point, a hero to those who loved him and shared his beliefs, and a symbol of the government's incompetence and corruption to those who despised him. Father Jeremiah, who saw Bukay as, quote, a symbol of the movement of fanatical groups and vigilantes, end quote, called for an investigation of Bukay's allies, protectors, and several common law wives, which included Julie Yi, according to rumors. Just a few months earlier, Johanna Mamalumpong, the younger sister of the Mamalumpong brothers and star witness in the case, retracted her testimony, and according to Jeremiah, this only happened after a visit from Yi. In April 2001, Bukay surrendered to the authorities and was presented to President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo. A year later, on April 15, 2002, Bukay was acquitted by the Sarangani Regional Trial Court on the murder of the Mamalumpong brothers. He was sent back to the new Bilibid prison to serve the remaining years of his sentence. On May 29, 2003, Bukay's brothers Edilberto and Elpidio, who were already 52 and 50 respectively, were released from the new Bilibid prison after almost 16 years. In September 2004, Bukay wrote Father Jeremiah, Bishop Romulo Valles of the Diocese of Kitapawan, and Gregorio Andolana, who was the diocese's lawyer. In his letter, Buhay asked for forgiveness and help for his earlier release from prison. He called himself a lost sheep who had returned to the flock and was committed to being, among others, quote, an instrument for the attainment of peace and conciliation, end quote, and vowing never again to be used by, quote, dirty traditional politicians or military elements, or any influential people, particularly by vigilantes and fanatical groups, end quote. A lot of back and forth went on between Buhay and the three, and after several consultations with witnesses, the Diocese of Kidapawan responded favorably to Buhay's request. In February 2005, Buhay wrote President Arroyo to request for executive clemency. 3 years later, on January 25, 2008, the order to free Buhay was signed by then Justice Secretary Raul Gonzalez, allowing Buhay to finally walk out of prison without having to escape. On February 4, 2008, Buhay was honored at a prayer service in the chapel of the Bishop's House in Kidapawan, where Father Tulio Favalli was buried. Buhay knelt in front of Favalli's marble gravestone, placed a lit candle beside it, made the sign of the cross, and bowed to let his forehead touch the marble. After Father Armando Angeles, the diocesan administrator, and 9 other priests took turns blessing Favalli's grave, Buhay knelt in front of it again and kissed the ceramic photograph of Favalli in the middle of the gravestone. Father Jeremiah and Gregorio Andolana were in attendance that day, and according to Andolana, repeating something Buhay had said before, quote, Commander Buhay is dead, Nonoy is very much alive, end quote. During the service, Father Angeles said it was a privilege to welcome their brother Nonoy, which was the name Buhay wanted to be called after his release from prison. Nonoy embraced everyone, including Jeremiah, even those who were there who had testified against him, like Manuel Bantolo, who was inside the eatery almost 23 years before in Barangay La Esperanza, where Nonoy and his men plotted the execution of Jeremiah and the others. In 2013, victims of human rights abuses during martial law were officially acknowledged by the Philippine government by virtue of the Human Rights Victims Reparation and Recognition Act, signed by President Benigno Aquino III. The piece of legislation aims to provide remuneration to the families of all martial law victims, including victims of the Ilaga. On July 7, 2017, a 71-year-old Nonoy was arrested in General Santos City after reportedly walking into the Criminal Investigation and Detection Group office at Camp Fermin Lira to follow up on a case where he had been requested as a consultant. He apparently had 2 pending arrest warrants for murder and attempted murder, issued in 2010, but he was confused as to how he had gotten past the NBI before to go to Thailand if those warrants had been out for 7 years already. It's unclear as of this recording whose murder and attempted murder the warrants were for, or what fate is in store for Nonoy. Perhaps his burial place in the future, like Lucis's grave, would also be visited by anting-anting hunters, though they might find that his invincibility might have been more because of padrinos and not because of talismans. For now, Norberto Manero Jr. remains in jail, awaiting sentencing for 2 more of the possibly hundreds of crimes he committed in his lifetime. Thank you for listening to Stories After Dark, a Spotify exclusive powered by Anchor. Stay tuned next week for a new episode, and to make sure you're updated about the show, please follow Stories After Dark on your Spotify app as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This episode was written, narrated, and produced by me, Derek. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. If you'd like to see the references used for this episode, suggest cases, send personal stories, or further support the show, you can go to storiesafterdark.ph for more information. All of the links are in the episode description.